it's possible that a war between the U.S. and Russia would begin like this.
Recalculating, 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 recalculating.
Stuff on the ground stops working because stuff in space is being attacked.
Explorer, new data coming through.
What's the blowback, Houston?
It's not good. Most of our systems are gone. Telecommunication systems are dead. Expect a communications blackout at any moment.
Kowalski visual of debris, 9 o'clock. Dr. Stone requesting faster transport.
We have to go.
Is space the next battlefield? The development and testing of anti-satellite weapons by Russia and China and the United States suggests yes is the answer to that question. The space battlefield is, to put it mildly, a target-rich environment. 1,300 satellites from 60 different nations, plus the threat of space junk could trigger an accidental conflict if an old wrench takes out all of the U.S. weather monitoring capability someday. The Obama administration has budgeted at least $5 billion to be spent over the next 5 years to enhance both the defensive and offensive capabilities of the U.S. military space program.
What's going on?
We're under attack.
Shield strength down to 52%. Minor damage to the port nacelle.
Two Klingon attack cruisers decloaking to port and starboard.
So, is the U.S. and NASA suddenly the Federation, Lee Billings? Lee Billings is a space and physics editor at Scientific American. What do you think?
Well, NASA, of course, is a civilian space program, so they're not directly involved in any space weaponization as far as we know.
What about defense, though?
Well, the Pentagon actually has a much larger budget for its space activities than NASA does. And they're obviously not in the business of just sending people to the moon or to the space station. They want to protect our assets up there. So they're ready to fight a war in space if they have to, and so are Russia and China.
How vulnerable are the satellite systems, and how vulnerable on the ground are we if there's a major attack on them?
Well, obviously, space is more and more integrated and interwoven into every aspect of our daily lives, right? You know, whether it's GPS, financial transactions, weather forecasting, you name it, satellite TV. We rely on satellites for everything, it seems like, in our lives more and more. And that could all be disrupted. That could all go away very quickly if a full-blown war happened in space. And that's because it really doesn't take a lot to potentially take out some of these assets. Something as small and low-tech as a marble could rip apart a billion-dollar satellite quite easily.
Which also means that, you know, in the Cold War context, the ability to identify quickly an accident versus a real attack is significantly diminished in space compared to what it was in the old, you know, failsafe era of the Cold War.
That's true. And I think this is kind of getting into, I think, the even bigger issue here, which is the issue of trying to determine what is a weapon in space. So as China has been conducting a series of anti-satellite missile tests over the past 8 years, the last one was in July of 2014. Russia has also been doing some interesting tests where it looks like they're developing satellite rendezvous capabilities, which could be peaceful, but could also be used to disable satellites. You sidle up to a satellite, you snap off its antennas or spray paint over its optics or destabilize its orbit. So the point is that there's a dual use for a lot of things in space. Almost anything could be a weapon, and it's very tough to determine whether things are hostile or not until it's too late.
And the war issue is not necessarily in space. An attack in space could be a prelude for something on the ground because it weakens defensive systems.
That's right, John. Yes. Essentially, the U.S. military and other militaries rely on space, just like we rely on space for so many things in our lives. The U.S. military relies on it for communications, for piloting drones, for knowing where its ships are and things like that. So if you can take out those capabilities or, you know, heaven forbid, an early warning for nuclear launches, things like that, we rely on satellites for that. If you take out some of those capabilities, then that means you have an advantage on the ground. So a war in space does not stay in space. A war in space is, as you said, the prelude to something that happens on Earth.
The U.S. has long had a technological edge in space, and I think it's probably less of an edge today than we're used to, than even most Americans believe probably at this point. Is it easy to identify defense satellites that protect defensive systems versus weather satellites or, you know, Netflix satellite?
Yeah, it is for the most part, because obviously the Department of Defense, in the case of the U.S., launches all of its material on, you know, certain rockets at certain times from certain places. Those are very well known. They go into certain orbits that even amateurs can find. So even the so-called secret satellites, amateurs usually find them quite quickly. Now, we don't know exactly what they're doing up there always, but we can find them. And a lot of these things are in so-called geosynchronous orbit, which is about 35,000 kilometers overhead. And that's a special orbit where essentially a satellite moves.
You stay in the same position.
That's right. So you get a constant surveillance. And so you're like a sitting duck up there. For a long time during the Cold War, those types of assets in geosynchronous orbit were seen as off limits. That was a sanctuary where you could be safe, because we had strategic stuff up there. The Russians had strategic stuff up there looking for early warning for nuclear launches. And you didn't touch that stuff because you could set off nuclear war.
So in a world of cooperative, you know, peace between nations, that geosynchronous orbit is a sanctuary. But in a world of competition, it's a sitting duck gallery.
That's right. So in May of 2013, a lot of folks got really alarmed by a Chinese missile test that came up almost to geosynchronous, it looks like. And when that happened, a lot of folks said, whoa, hey, holy cow, all of a sudden maybe these things that we considered sacred and untouchable are not so untouchable anymore. And that made a lot of people worry. And that's what's stimulating a lot of the new funding and a lot of people like, you know, the director of national intelligence, Jim Clapper, talking to Congress and saying, we're very worried about this and the vulnerability of our satellites.
We think he's telling the truth, right? Yeah, that's another subject. Before we go, just a minute. Is the first, you know, capability we need to explore with that $5 billion from Barack Obama, the potential for protecting the geosynchronous band, basically shooting down a missile that's coming towards the geosynchronous band, or do you have to get it on the ground?
That's a really tough question. People are looking at a wide variety of options, for whether that's chances are, if you're in geosynchronous, you're just going to be moving out of the way. You're going to see something coming, and that's like trying to attack a 747 in Europe when you're launching from the United States, right? So you have time to move out of the way. That's probably what's going to happen first. We need to try to look at diplomatic solutions, either a treaty or a code of conduct, something like that probably.
Repositioning satellites is probably the only thing you can do once the missile gets up there. Lee Billings is Scientific American editor for Space and Physics. Lee, thanks so much.
My pleasure.